Hi, welcome to the Blackthorn Grove, where witchcraft meets with friends over tea to discuss the nature of community and what's going on. Today, I have the absolute joy to have Stephanie Rosebird on the podcast. Stephanie is a painter and the author of several best-selling books on earth spirituality, hoodoo, and anthropology, including African American Magic, Sticks, Stones, Roots, and Bones. Please go and buy 7 copies of this book. Just trust me. 365 Days of Hoodoo. Light and Bright and Damn Near White, Bird Who Holds a BFA cum laude and an MFA and a devotee of the divine feminine, divinely feminine. She's an elder priestess, magic maker, and keeper of the spirit wisdom of her indigenous African ancestors. Her work centers on the nexus of earth wisdom and the legacy of Black cultural heritage. Find her at stephanierosebird.com and follow her on Instagram at s.r.bird. And welcome to the podcast. I'm so excited
Thank
that you're here.
you. I'm so happy to be here with you.
When
What a
Aaron reached
great
out,
way to spend, what a
go
great
ahead.
way to spend lunchtime.
Oh my goodness. When Aaron reached out and said, "Hey, would you like to have Stephanie on the podcast and talk about her new?" Yes. 7 times, yes. All
Oh,
we did this
so
yesterday, in fact.
yeah, so nice. So nice to be. You and I are from the same part of the world. You know that, right?
Yes,
South
I
Georgia is right next door.
so close. I have to tell you, I found your first book in Mystical Voyage in Baltimore in probably 07 or 06, and I was hooked. I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna hand these to people as they come into my classes from now on, and that'll be
Is
the
so nice.
required reading.
Was it the Sticks, Stones, Roots, and Bones book that
Yes.
caught your eye? Oh, yeah. People like that book. It's nice. It was my first book,
It
you
was a
know.
gr it's a great book. It's still a great book.
Thank
The
you.
works that you've produced path beyond them, you stayed consistent with quality and with your voice, and it just really it let me know that the practices that were being brought to this to our community were had that strong voice behind it. It wasn't just, oh, you could do a thing if you wanted. No, you
Yeah.
have own your power and move forward, step into it fully.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Most definitely.
What made
Yeah.
you want to create? What gives you the drive to bring that out into the world?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think I'm a natural teacher, and so what I do, I like to share and inspire others to perhaps engage in it as well. So, you know, I started as an art professor, just in terms of this career-wise. And so I liken my painting teacher, I was a painting professor, to this magic making that we're doing now because it's full of creativity and strong intent and knowing yourself, like all of that good stuff. It's a nice crossover between the two.
That's really incredible. There was a. Did you have you ever been to the American Visionary Art Museum?
I have not.
Oh my goodness, it's an incredible museum, and you know you're there when you arrive outside. It's one of the most singularly designed buildings ever created. It's a
Yes.
column. It looks like a giant grain silo that's covered in brick and mosaic glass.
Yes.
And there's a giant mosaic egg covered in broken mirrors outside.
Goodness.
It's got cobalt glass and there's broken mirrors and it just breathes light.
Yeah.
And the neat thing is about this is they're one of the very few museums that doesn't rely on traditional, not just design classes and background. It gives open opportunities for artists of all backgrounds.
Oh, yeah.
And so, probably in 2005, I go every year to see whatever the major exhibit is. And they had an exhibit on three-dimensional found art from the African diaspora.
Yes.
They had a bed that was designed for Erzuli Freda. That was I get goosebumps thinking about it. It's just,
Oh, wow.
they had an entire wall devoted to La Sirène. And
Yes.
it's just an incredible museum, and I love all of the things that they're doing for the, especially the community.
Yeah, that's great.
If you ever
I
get a chance, it's
have to go. I must go. So much.
really close
I
to.
just wrote it down. I don't know how it escaped me.
It's very close to the Inner Harbor. It's in Federal Hill. In the summer, they show movies for the community on the side of the building.
Yes.
Free, and it's they do a lot for
That's
some of the stuff
great.
that they, John Waters has a permanent collection there. It's actually really interesting.
Yeah. You know, they have a lot of like I'm trying to just I always struggle with words
It's
because
okay.
I'm a writer, it's like it has to be like right. You know what I mean?
I do, I really do.
RIG. Yeah. So, but we have a lot of interest in folk art and self-taught artists and outsider artists. They're called all three things in Chicagoland, where I live. So we have a lot of galleries that are devoted to that work, and it influences all of us that are practicing
Yes.
painting. Yeah, you can't help but get enveloped into the energy and the power of it and the stories behind it.
Absolutely, especially when you get to those transition periods when artists transition between mediums just to get reinvigorated in their practice and get an outside perspective on what they're missing from their own art and their own vision.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I love that word, visionary.
Bless them, because it's difficult work.
Yes.
The it's the, I'm writing a novel, and I'm centerpiecing the museum because when you walk in, it's a giant ramp that takes you up. It's very handicap accessible. It was really important to me. But the center of this museum is just open to the ceiling, 6 stories up. And in the center column that drops down all day and rises is a stained glass mosaic that is life-sized of Icarus falling from the heavens, and his wings are just giant rainbow mosaic glass. And all day long, it slowly lowers until it gets to the bottom and then slowly raises. So, no matter where you go, when you go there, you can get different views of the artistry that went into it. It's really beautiful.
You know, I was in an exhibition called Art Prize in it's in Michigan, Grand Rapids. And they have a portion of well, it's called Art Prize. So the prizes, though, are primarily coming from the public. And so the art that they select is it's very accessible and very intriguing. What you spoke of just now reminded me of there was a dragon piece outdoors. A lot of the work is outside art, like outdoors.
Yes.
And that it had movable pieces, and I was like, "When's the fire coming out?" I've always been so intrigued with dragons, and they started to now have it every few years or every other year. I'm not sure exactly, but when we went, we just couldn't believe the energy behind it all and the throngs of people that would come to see art, because you think of art as such a, I do. It can be quite a rarefied experience, but there it was very popular and very much of the people in the hands of the people to make the decisions who won the awards. So,
Really incredible. I just got
yeah.
back from Grand Rapids. I went to it was actually this October. Tiffany
Yeah.
Boggins, haha, from Witch Lab in Cleveland, and Columbus was having an event. So I went out to Grand Rapids to visit friends and then sort of drove down. But Grand Rapids has such a neat community of
Yes.
makers of all kinds.
Yes. Yeah. That's what was apparent there. I mean, people flew in, people drove in with big trucks. There was one lady also with an incredible exhibition. So instead of using paint, she used amethyst.
Oh,
And then she did, like, it was so large. It was like, I don't know,
wow.
11, 12 foot square, something like that. So they put it by the elevator and she sat by it the whole time, you know. If she didn't win an award, I would have given her an award. Yeah, because it was really, really something, something spectacular. Like, to those of us that are involved in the magical world, you know,
Yes.
just to see something like that, it was really, really a vision.
I mean, it's incredible when you think about the number of paints that are created from stone, but to just paint with the actual stones is
I know.
incredible.
Yeah, I know. That is interesting. Yeah. I have done some of that too, where I've used like shells and squid ink and just regular earth mixed with different binders to paint with over the years. So, yeah.
So neat being able to practice your magic as art and art as magic. We talk about the art of magic a lot, but when you're making literal art
Yeah.
from the actual earth that you're standing on, it's got to be such a
Yeah.
connective and restorative process.
Yeah, I like when potters do that, when they just go into the riverbanks and find their clay that way, because there's a number of large number of potters who are very involved in their location and their place in the world, and they put that out into the world permanently. It's very moving.
And we don't give enough credit to the wide variety of colors that could be found on your local riverbanks.
I know.
There's some really lovely potters on TikTok and on Facebook that just go and they share their journey harvesting the clay and finding where those colors are going to match and what the end result is going to be.
Yeah.
When if you start with paint, you sort of visualize what you're going to do and build from there. But if you don't even know what your medium is going to look like,
I know.
it's going to
I
be much
know.
different.
Yeah. Speaking of novels, I started a novel and it has a really powerful start, but it's only like 50 pages long. I think it has three chapters, but was inspired when I was in Michigan. There's a state park there whose name will come back to me eventually, but we always go to that park, so I should know. Maybe it's better to leave it as a mystery so everyone can just imagine, you know. But anyway, we went there, we were sort of hiking, and the most incredible sight in the riverbank, the water was really low, you know, from not enough rain. And there were all these people down there with their belongings on top of their heads, just walking. And there is a sacred site in there that they were headed to, apparently, because at that time I didn't know, I'm not really familiar with that area. But I was so captivated by that. And then it got me into water spirits and the divinity of water and earth. So I started a novel based on that that I have to get back to. I don't know if it might scare me, because the woman, young woman, she's only, it's like a young adult book. She's only about 15, and she lives between worlds. She lives on earth, but she's also able to travel back and forth. So she gets sent to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan to kind of try to come back to her senses, so to speak, you know, because she's just a Chicago native, and her family's like, we have to get you out of the city, we're going to send you out there. And of course it doesn't change, it's just, it's always with you if that's who you are. And she's not crazy, they're trying to pump her with medications and things like that. But when she goes to the Upper Peninsula, her aunt gives her sitz baths and like a lot of other things that you'll find in my book and in our books, you know, of how to heal people. So I must get back to that. I'm glad you mentioned that. Made me think.
Of course, I just found an app on, I think it was advertised on TikTok at that point. It's called Tome.
Oh.
It just dives into the individual pieces so you can tease those threads out and flesh them out into a book.
Oh, wow.
And it talks about how to develop your character, what does
Yeah.
the scenery look like? It gives you little writing exercises. You can export what you write at the end of the day. So
Yeah.
if you lost access to the app tomorrow, you still have all your material that you wrote.
Oh,
It's really neat. I'm enjoying working with this. It gamifies each of those steps. So you earn leaves to build your tree, and
wow. Oh my
it's
goodness.
a little forest path, and it lights up, and it's
Sounds a lot better than the I have an app that I use. No offense, Living Writer, people, but yeah, I have Living Writer and it serves its purpose, but it's nowhere near the amount of fun that you're describing to me and winning rewards to help you continue your journey. It sounds great. I'm going to definitely check that out today.
Yeah, it's great. You have to earn this many leaves to go to this step, so make sure you're
Oh.
laying the groundwork so you can't just like skip ahead to the end.
Yeah.
You have to earn your leaves and build your path, and it's very serene. I'm enjoying the process of it because I write with Scrivener, but
Yeah.
it's a blank page. This has given me something that's not a blank page.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I have so I have two other novels and a children's book also in development. The other two novels are complete drafts, let's say. I used to say they were finished, but they're not. They're very full of it's speculative fiction, so they're just very fantastic, not in quality, so to speak, but like in the world building and that kind of thing. It's very fantasy oriented. I have fun with those, but I think that they are a lot for people. You know, I'm just like, what in the world? Because I have quite an imagination. So, but I want to get back to my Michigan book.
Isn't it Da Vinci that said that all great works of art are never finished? They're merely abandoned. Like, we get
I
there.
don't
We
know,
just.
but I love that. Yeah, I'm sure.
I get to that point when I'm editing where I just feel like I'm getting to the point where I'm editing to death and I just have to
Yes.
stop and walk away from it and just consider it finished if it's not
Yes.
done.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh, the editing process is so I love it and I do it as a job as well as doing it for my books. But you do need to pull back and away from it because you can suck the life out of the work.
Absolutely. When
Yeah.
I my editor for Wiser is Judica, and
Yeah.
so when I was working on my first book, when I was working on Botanical Magic, I wrote it, and then she read it and she came back and she said, "I love you." Like, we'd been friends for 10 years before we started working together.
Yeah.
She said, "I read the book and it's a great book, but I can't hear your voice at all. You're
Yeah.
you've edited it to the point where you've taken you completely out of it. Like, people want you. It's okay to have a voice. Like, that's what
Yes,
people want."
definitely. And I love Judica too. And we've been friends for a really long time.
Would
She
take a
has,
bullet for her.
yeah, she's really, I can't say enough good about her because she's so, such a rare bird to be a subject matter expert, a practitioner, and an editor at a publishing house. It's just like, well, this is like, it doesn't happen. So,
No, and
yeah.
people don't get how rare it is that someone who actually understands the project and the subject is in charge of putting that together and making sure that it flows. That
Yes.
never happens.
I know. No, she's really one in a million.
Yes.
Yeah. And friendly.
Oh my
So
God,
we
yes.
can
And
call her our friend. Yeah.
she would give you the shirt off her back.
Yeah. Yeah, she's something.
Where did your journey with witchcraft start?
It started kind of organically a long time ago. I would say I had these girls, we were girls that moved into my town, and they told me they were witches. And I was like, oh, it wasn't like, some people would be like, oh my gosh, get away from me, or you're really weird. But I was like, oh, I want to myself, I didn't say it to them, I want to know more. They lived in a house like that was from 1700s, it was just like it all fit together really well. They had really unusual names, and we did become friends. And We were in association and community with one another, magically. So that was a really long time ago. I think that the very first time that I was hit was in fourth grade, just performing the Macbeth piece with the three witches. I just like had no problem memorizing it all. Like it was me. It was, I don't know, it took over me. It took over my senses. I got it. I was in. So it's been a long time, I would say.
It's definitely a powerful experience. I was in freshman comp, and my instructor pulled out this pulled it just hit the record. Beginning of that scene with no preamble, no anything. It was just like, okay, let's start for the day. And to lead in with these incredible booming voices talking about witchcraft.
Yes, I
I
know.
had it's really a singular experience.
Yeah, in a way, I just thought of it. It may be like in Sticks, Stones, Roots, and Bones. Some people said, oh my gosh, her ingredient list is so long. It may be in part due to that. I think it's,
It
because it's like it's all kind of things in there, in that cauldron that they were mixing. So,
How were you able to mix your witchcraft practice with your African traditional religions exposure, your experiences? Did they just, or were they just one practice and sort of looked at it two different ways? How does that work?
well, when I looked at the what was in print at that time and what was in the ether, so to speak, at our different healing centers here and so forth, I was like, oh my gosh, there's no black faces there, and there needs to be, or on the shelves, I don't see them. So, whereas my magic started, green magic specifically, then morphed into shamanism. Once I was able to, because I'm very academic and I do a lot of studies and studying, and once I saw what was going on in the different parts of the diaspora, I was like, oh, okay, this is has differences, but it also has a base that's quite similar. This interest in the earth bearing magic for us and providing for us, and appreciating water and fire, all of the different elements. It just sort of organically came together for me.
Beautiful. There's a lot of people don't understand if they come from outside herbalism, outside green witchcraft spaces, how important voices of experience are to those practices.
Yes. It's really important. And I think that I did, like, I cottoned on to, somehow I found Jambalaya by Louise Itesh. Yay. And that was like an instrumental book for me. There's all these different big moments that I think of in my life. The first time that I saw art, it was actually in a museum in Delaware.
Oh,
It was the
the one in
oh,
Wilmington?
the family, the very famous
DuPont.
family I met.
DuPont.
No, not
No?
DuPont.
Oh,
No,
goodness.
it's a painting. I think it's called Christina's World.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and then they also had the a lot of impressionism in there, and it sucked me in. Like, it looks murky sometimes to people, but for me it was so clear. And her strife and her climb up that hill has been a emblem for me in my life. Anyway, back to Louisa's book, it just grabbed me and fascinated me, and I was like, yeah, she was putting it together. She put together Wudang with African American spirituality and also just mainstream magic, and it was all together, and it is all together in that book. And she has done 13 books altogether. That book is the one that at first really grabbed me. So in the way that you're speaking about putting these different traditions together and amalgamation.
In another country heard from. Thank you, Lily.
Oh, I'm so angry with myself with the because they are a family of painters. They're much more realistic than I am. And they work with Wyatt,
Thank
Andrew
you.
Wyatt.
Yes, yes. Oh my goodness, yes. Yeah,
So
the
it's
Delaware Art Museum
different.
has a great Wyeth collection.
Yes, but the spirit in the work, even though it is realistic, because I'm a little biased against that. I'm an abstractionist, but it has a great spirit to it. So, yeah.
If you're listening to this, if you ever get to Delaware, the Delaware Art Museum has the world's largest Pre-Raphaelite Brotherhood collection. It's there's they have a huge outdoor sculpture garden. It's really lovely, and I absolutely re recommend.
Yeah, so it all comes together, you know. It's a matter of which way can you speak most clearly? It's like, you know, I danced for a really long time. I was in traveling troupes and things like that. I did traveling choir, both classical and gospel. I did drama, you know, plays, but there's something about writing that is natural for me, and it's an extension of my voice and hand in a different way than all of the other different genres of the arts are for me. So.
Absolutely. There's one way, a branch of ivy will catch the light, and I can see the painting of it in my head, but words are going to have a completely different effect on your audience than if you were just to say, hey, this is something I painted.
It's a larger view. You know, a really neat thing is my new book that's going to come out June 11th, Motherland Herbal. It combines my art. It has over 50 images of my black and white works, and then a very extensive text of, it started like 700 pages, and I think it's close to 500 now. So lots of work went into that.
I
It
bet.
sort of looks at all of my different books, and elements of them are in there, but then I expand upon it. And particularly at the end, it goes sort of explodes out. I would say I got very excited about the last segment of the book. But yeah, having the opportunity to have the paintings like larger scale, because they're in Stick, Stones, Roots and Bones and another of my books, but they seem in those books a little periphery. They're very small, and I think that when you do that in size, that's why a lot of like painters, you know, they paint really, really largely. It's because they want to be seen. So now in that book, the work is seen, and it is spiritual work. It's not illustration in the traditional manner that you might think of it, especially in an herbal guide. So, really happy about that.
In the healing tree, you're talking about reclaiming traditional herbal practices and how important it is. Were you really supported in the way that you wanted to approach it? Do you feel like you have the community support saying, yes, we want to hear what you have to say. We want to reclaim these really important teachings?
Well, okay, so like if I look at it from a publishing standpoint, I had a really hard time getting it published. It was first published as The Healing Grove by independent publishing group and the Chicago Review Press. They accepted it, but it was like a little bit, you know, like, we don't know. We don't know if this is gonna really hit people or anything. And it's sort of like, you know, I'm always filled with gratitude for every of my different publishers. So I'm not knocking them at all. I had some really nice relationships with the different editors there, staff, and so forth. I don't think it was at its right time that it first came out. So it came out in like, I think it was 2009 or 2010, something like that. And now people are ready for a book like that, and the Black community is ready, the Black youth, people I refer to as the naturalistas are, into it, So it's like now is its time. You never know about as authors, like what's going to happen with your book and how the community will embrace it or not. I don't think that it had, I think it took all of my other work to propel the Healing Grove to where it is now.
Absolutely.
The other day I saw, I look on, you have to look, on Amazon at so many subcategories, and then you find yours and then new releases, but it was number one in its category for a minute or two, like for a day.
Fantastic. Ah,
Yeah, maybe it'll
it
rise back up, but that's
as
so different than where it was as the Healing Grove.
I'm so excited for people to really get into this, especially the very important palms, the VIPs of the transatlantic tree world. Like
Yes, yes.
people, the things I know we don't know what we don't know, but also please go and find this book because some of the plants that are in there are just desperately reaching out for a connection with people.
Yes, they are. They really are. And when you asked me a question earlier about how I got involved or like how I got into like where I am now, it has a lot to do with trees. Of all of the different plants, it's the trees. It's the trees that spoke to me. It's a tree that I hugged and loved and laid in her bosom for a long time, and I speak about that in the Healing Grove, Healing Tree. Yeah, it's the trees, all the different types, and that comes from, I was raised in a place that was largely trees and a lake, trees on all of the sides of us behind our home, to the east and west, and across from the lake, there were more trees. So, you couldn't help but get to know them unless you have blinders on, like spiritual blinders, which some people that happens. But, for me, they just grabbed me up. And I was like, oh, this energy is very special. I can vibe with it. And it's reciprocal exchanges spiritually, and I love them. So.
And it's such an important feeling that I never expected. I grew up in Baltimore City. There is one tree per block,
Yeah.
and
How?
I my go ahead.
Well, how is that for you being who you are now? Like, how did you make these associations into the green world with that being your first experience? I know I shouldn't be interviewing you, but I'm just
No, it's a
I'm
great question.
curious.
My parent, I had a very colorful childhood. It was difficult.
Yeah.
So when we moved from Baltimore City to Baltimore County, there was a tree in our yard, and there was an azalea bush, and these getting to know these individual plants, because when you grow up in the middle of the woods, you take for granted that the trees exist, that
Yeah.
brush is available, that briars exist.
Yeah.
But we were outside. It was probably one of the first days we had actually lived in this house, and it was too quiet. It scared the bejesus out of me because there's no traffic noises, there's no honking, there's no lights, there's nothing.
Right.
And I'm
Yeah.
going, how am I going to exist? We can't walk to a 7-Eleven.
Yeah. How old were you then?
It was in between second and third grade.
Oh.
And so I'm go out into the yard, and I meet this azalea, bright pink, bright magenta. And I
Yeah.
sit down at the feet of this azalea, like I'd never seen flowers before. And I brushed one of the cups, and the flower fell out. And inside was this little perfect seed. And I'm like, oh my God, that's where seeds come from.
Yeah.
Flowers. It was like the
Yeah.
universe downloaded into my brain. And then from then on, anytime I needed safety or connection or nurturing, I went to the plants. I went to the trees. I went to the forest. We lived right
Yeah.
outside Gunpowder State Park. And
I
so
see.
I could be there in just a minute, and I could hike and in the woods, I could get into the water, sit
Yeah.
and enjoy the Gunpowder River, which is I it's below freezing. Your ankles turn blue when you get in there
Oh
in
gosh.
July.
Yeah.
But it's
So, yeah, that's a similarity that we have, another one, because I moved from I call it the suburb of New York. So we were in North Jersey, and an urban suburb, to say the least. Lots of apartment buildings and sidewalks and all of that. And I think we moved. I was in first or second grade, so I think that maybe our appreciation for nature is a little bit to do with that switchover, that shift.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because it was really different for me, and it was not a bed of roses. I was like, it was very racist where I was. There were very few black people. There were black people right immediately where I was living. It was like an enclave of us. But in the larger town, it was pretty segregated and mean-spirited, I felt. By and large. So it was hard. I mean, that was the 60s, so it's probably, hopefully, a different place now, but then was tough. And I had left my family. So, I mean, I was with my parents and my brothers at that point. I didn't have my sister yet. But I mean, my grandmother and my great grandmother and my aunts and uncles and cousins. So they all lived there and you could easily get to them. So it was a difference. And I think going from sidewalk to bare earth and things like that, it has an effect on you, because every summer I made sure no shoes. It was my policy.
Yes.
No shoes, unless we were going into town or something where it would be trouble if you did so. But at home on the earth, just me and my feet. So.
I had a very similar experience. North Baltimore is an all black neighborhood. There's like three white kids, and I moved by high school. I was in Cecil County, and there's a sundown town called Rising Sun. Like,
Oh yeah. Yeah, I lived on one. It had Nigger Lane where supposedly we were hung, Yeah. But yeah.
I had heard people talk about this on TV, but a white kid living in a black neighborhood, I was very insulated from the idea of that.
Yeah, that, yeah. It shapes you, all of these experiences, especially in your formative years. You can't, you don't forget. So, it's been quite an evolution. And now I live in a really integrated place. So, and I have really, it is an urban suburb because it gets much more suburban west of me. But I've made my garden really lush. We grow vegetables and crops in our front yard. And then I have my herbs all around them and flowers. So, you can make life what you want it to be.
Beautifully said.
Yeah. You have to make choices, though, sometimes, and those political issues are big, when you're raising children and things like that. Like, you don't really, I would not, I begged to go to some other school. I hadn't heard of homeschooling, but I was like, I have to get away from this place. It's so destructive to me. But my parents weren't in the position to put me in any other kind of school, so I stayed there and suffered through it. That's what I would call it.
Yeah, I will never understand those people who look forward to their high school reunion because they miss what they had.
Yeah, I
That's
know.
that just sounds awful.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, my high school was great because we were bused. So we were bused from like three different communities to where I went to high school, and I discovered yoga there and became involved in French club and the drama, theater club. So that was it was nice. The high school was good. There were, it was mixed because of the busing. So you never realize that you're actually a part of history, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Civil rights and that, So it's like it is inevitable, and it would be a complete sham and lie if my work didn't focus around Black folks in one way or the other,
Absolutely.
and also help seek to reach out and enhance and share and have this reciprocal relationship with my community. So,
Beautiful. What do you find is one of your biggest driving factors in your creations, whether it's art, whether it's writing?
I just feel these feelings inside that something's actually percolating or being made in my mind, and I have to get it out either on the page, the computer, or in the case of art, materially, but it has to get out into the world from my head. I can't, it's too much to hold. Right now I want to make a divination kit, and it's like it's just in my head right now, and I have the materials to do it. So then there's also this factor in creativity where you're almost afraid that what's comes out into the world isn't going to live up to your mind, how beautiful it is or how interesting, or so I play with that too.
Do you have any specific tips that help you overcome that imposter syndrome?
Yeah, so I was thinking imposter syndrome. I believe in like a typical witch, so many deities and devas and orishas, like, so I believe that they help me get over those hurdles. I also use like our tools, like candles and incenses and teas and things like that. I listen to my dreams. Yeah, it's from being spiritual that I can move forward past that. And it's almost like they're almost like seeds where the time has to be right. Like I said, with the healing tree, like this is its time, Motherland Herbal, this is its time as well. And that kit will come out of me, first of all, so that I have the physical sample when it's ready, but it needs to be ready soon because it utilizes clay, you know what I mean? And I don't want the clay to get hard, but and then, as a creative, you're like, oh, if only I had that app, or if only I had the right materials. I went and got materials and everything, so there's nothing left except for me and the materials to get busy. So
Fantastic. There has been some beautiful conversation around the need for more Black voices in magical spaces. Do you have any advice for our listeners to try and get their voices heard?
yeah, approach people, network, write proposals, like just write like, hey, I'd like to offer this workshop. And I did so much of that, like in the early 2000s. I was always like out there pounding the pavement, so to speak, like I have this to offer, and make it your own. Don't repeat what is already just going out, tumbling around, maybe beautiful and wonderful, but make it your own. And people will listen. There's a real openness to our traditions and to hearing our voices right now. So I would definitely jump on that.
My favorite question. Who's your favorite fictional witch?
Oh. Well, it's the three witches, first of all,
Yes.
Macbeth. But there are also a couple of different novel series that I like a lot. Anne Rice's works, the Taltos witches in there. I'm just like, oh my gosh, I gobbled up those pieces. And when she passed away, I was just so like heartbroken and following her whole evolution. So it's definitely witches from her work.
I'm sure my mother is still in mourning.
Yeah.
There was a lot of Anne Rice in our house growing up.
Yeah, I even showed her what her son wrote about her sort of obituary from Instagram to my children, and they were like, probably like, what? Like, huh? What does this have to do with me? A lot of people, they just sort of relate to her work from movies, but it's such a different experience than how sensual and sensory her books are and believable.
Absolutely. Research is really well done.
And talk about a voice. Like, this is he's different because he's a vampire, but Lestat's voice is like, wow, I am listening to this guy right now. And it's a little bit frightening. It's exciting. You know what I mean? It's like all of these different things all at once. So,
Absolutely. And it's people don't get the experience when they look at the comparison between all I read a book and I watched the movie. You lose that texture of the author's voice and the characters' voices when you're just seeing dialogue played out.
And they bring in a pop actress and actor, and oh, it's not the same at all.
No, and then they go and change the cover and it's just wrong.
It's better to use your imagination, I think, with characters, just to you decide how they look and feel and move through the world. But movies just make it, or television, so like it erases that kind of creativity from your mind that
Yes.
reading allows.
Thank you so much for joining me today. This has just been a treasure.
I've had such a ball. I mean, I really just feel like we're miles apart, and I feel like we're really close together, just like sharing our beverages and having a good time. I would say tea, but I'm drinking sparkling water. But yeah, same idea.
I had to have sweet tea,
Yeah,
growing up, and people
same
say, "Okay,
difference.
what was you're a green witch? What was your favorite plant? And what was your?"
Yeah.
I grew up with my mom making sweet tea in the kitchen. Like,
Yeah.
I didn't. I had to go and find the plants. I was lucky to go to a technical high school that allowed me to do flower and plant production. So I had
Oh.
a second year where I went back as an independent study and just grew my own herbs, and I created hydroponic gardens, and I was able to grow witchcraft herbs and tell no one.
Yeah. Oh wow. That's cool. That's very cool. Yeah, I wrote a little piece. I know we're winding down, but I wrote something that's going to be anonymous, but now that I'm telling you about it, it might not be
I'll
so
know.
anonymous. But there's a piece of mine on this project called Scent Tattoo. You
Ooh.
know, she's an aromatherapist, the creator of this project. And I wrote about one of my first experiences with herbs, and it was bergamot, and having it and a pomade rubbed into my scalp and massaged as a child sitting between my mother's legs. Such a vivid and beautiful and comforting experience. But that's just a mass produced product. That's just a product that it wasn't until years later that I realized, oh my gosh, that was bergamot. That's the scent, but it left a definite tattoo on me in terms of an herb. That was my first like real exposure. Tea is definitely an herb, whether it's sweetened or not. It's just, one of the earliest enjoyed herbs. tea.
Yes. It was a very interesting experience because my mother didn't have a mother. She raised her younger siblings, and her
Oh.
father worked for the power company. So
Yeah.
she didn't learn to cook so much as she learned how to make hamburger helper.
Yes.
It wasn't
Probably.
until she got together with my father that he taught her how to cook, and she's sort of experiencing plants and herbs and the cooking that she was doing for the first time. So
Yeah.
it was really neat to grow as a person with her sort of figuring that stuff out so we could learn together.
Yeah, definitely. Someone is coming. Okay, sorry about that.
No, it's all good.
You know, that's the thing about these little sidewalks that lead into your home. There are going to be people coming and going, but everything's good. And yeah, it's so enjoyable to speak with you.
I'm so glad you were able to take some time
Yeah.
with me. Where can
Yeah.
our listeners find you?
So I have a website, www.stephanierosebird.com. On Instagram, that also it connects to my Facebook, is S period R period, and then just the BIRD bird. And soon I'm opening a school where I am going to offer apprenticeships. It's called Earthwise Spirituality. That's going to start in Black History, the next Black History Month that we have, so February of 2025. And I'm so excited about it and so excited to be able to, on a regular weekly basis, talk to people, participants, and share my knowledge and hear them share their knowledge with each other. It's going to be beautiful.
I will absolutely share that on Witchcraft Down and Dirty so we can get the most eyeballs on it.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. This is fabulous. I'm so excited to see that more the number of people who can hear your voice increase.
Yes. Yeah. It's important. And yeah, it's important also that these podcasts, you know, your style is so conducive to just opening up, like your questions just flow, and I really enjoy that today.
Thank you
And,
so much.
yeah, it brings different things out of you than normally.
We've all experienced those interviews where it's just hammering you with questions and you don't even get a chance to answer them before the next question. Nobody wants to
Right.
listen to that.
Yeah, and the same questions. But I love you guys too.
Yes,
Love
yes.
everybody,
We
right?
love everyone always, forever. We have a wonderful afternoon. Thank you so much for taking the
You
time to join us.
too. Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, anytime. I would love to have you back to talk about your school next year, your next
I'd
book.
love to. Yeah.
We could do this once a week and I would be happy. That's fine.
I would too. I would too. Every lunch, it's like 1 o'clock here now, and yeah, it's a beautiful way to spend lunch. Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Have a
Thank
wonderful,
you.
wonderful afternoon. And
You too.
I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.